and welcome to episode 50 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're going to talk about the previous 49 episodes and answer a ton of your questions as well. We made it to episode 50, even though episode 52 is way cooler.
I don't know.
But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. And welcome to our newest patrons, Justin Willard and Christopher Dong. Also, a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Yeah. So, first announcement, Josh is not dead.
Not
dead. Josh.
Did you talk about me being dead in the last one?
We weren't really sure.
I mean, I went to a country with volcanoes in it, so I can understand.
We were concerned about maybe like Nicaraguan gorillas or whatever, like, you know, being kidnapped.
Yeah.
I mean, you were pickpocketed though.
I was. It was, I mean, it's very chill. Like you just kind of look at your pocket like an hour later and like, oh, it's not there anymore. Damn it.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't like being held up at gunpoint or anything.
Yeah, we weren't. There was a mismatch in communication. Following Monday, next Monday, different things, but we made it. We handled it. Kitty came, saved us, took the place of Josh, which was odd since Kitty. This is the first episode we've all been together in 4 episodes.
Oh, yep. God, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So it's fitting that it's episode 50. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We have a winner to our contest. However, the winner is on my laptop, so we're going to do that a little bit later and figure out who won.
Nice.
But there is a winner. And I will announce the next contest first, though. While Josh is reading something, I'm going to pull out the laptop and find the actual winner. Yes. So our next contest, though, we're going to start right away. This one, I'm going to say, is not sponsored by, but thanks to Christy. So she sent us a game called Raxxon, which is a co-op zombie fighting game, but it's not so much zombies as it is like this virus that's breaking out. It's set in the Dead of Winter universe, so it is zombies, but what you're trying to do is evacuate all of the good guys while killing or quarantining the bad guys. If you win, you get to go online, you get to mark your progress, they give you different scenarios you can play. It's really cool, but it's invite only. So
invite only.
Exactly.
Ooh,
so
exclusive.
Someone has to. Exactly. So you have to be sent it or. You have to be either sent an invitation to buy it or just sent the game straight up. So we're going to give away 2 Raxxons. So our next contest is going to have 2 winners to it. You have to enter before Friday, August 25th, and then we will announce the winner on the following Tuesday from that Friday. In my head, I think it's the 30th or 31st, but Kitty's now looking. To enter, give the subject August to give away, and you can tell us anything you want. It can be as simple as, hey, I want to enter, I want to kill zombies, or you can say, man, Chris, you're so cool. I just think you're the greatest.
No one's ever done that.
No one's ever done it. No. So that's why I'm trying to encourage that.
It'll be announced on the 29th.
The 29th. Excellent. So that's our next contest. And we will announce in this episode the winner of Plague Inc. and Arena for the Gods before the end of the episode. It will happen. We have a ton of entries, lots of questions. And we'll hear those questions on the other side.
So to make absolutely sure, you're giving away 2 of the actual boxes of Raxxon. Like they're going to get the physical game.
They're going to get the physical game.
Not the invite to the game.
Not the invite.
Right.
Going to get it for free. I'm going to say, hey, give me your address. I go to Plaid Hat. And actually, I think it's like Raxxon.com or something equivalent to that. And I'm going to type in your name, your address, my credit card number. And you're going to get a black box in the mail.
Ooh. And then, but I'm assuming you could, I guess you could send them the link for the invitation only thing as well, so that they could send that invitation to other people.
Oh, when they get the game, they get to invite 3 people.
Oh, now I understand.
Yeah. So it's a pyramid scheme. I mean, it's exclusive.
It's really cool.
It's not really a pyramid scheme because you're not making money off the other people doing it.
You aren't. I mean,
you just get a cool game.
Yeah, it is a cool game, though. It is. It's a really easy to learn, fun co-op game. It's not like the deepest thing. It's a lighter pandemic. So where pandemic, there's a lot going on. This is much lighter than that.
Wow, lighter than the pandemic.
Yeah, but there's a lot of thought and strategy to it.
Which is crazy because Dead of Winter is one of the most complicated games I have ever tried to learn. I don't know. I tried learning that long before I got into this, though, maybe. So maybe it deserves a revisit, but
we should revisit it.
Because the hidden traitor being the only person who knows how to play the game is a really difficult situation.
Well, this is cool, too, because in the box, in the Raxxon box, you get two characters for Dead of Winter as well. So it's like little promo characters that you can use in your Dead of Winter. Let's see. Moving on to cool things. We are like around the corner from Gen Con. I think that's going to be episode 53. So we're like less than 2.5 weeks from our Gen Con episode. Josh won't be there. We've mentioned that. Kitty will be there. I will say next week's episode, we normally save it until the very end, but next week episode, we're going to be talking about organizing your game collection, which we had working titled called The Purge, which was me getting rid of a ton of games. I have a stack of games about 4 feet tall, maybe 8 or 10 feet long down the hall. And that's about maybe 2/3 of my games.
I'd say 12 feet.
Maybe 12 feet down the hall.
Yeah, I was going to say it's longer than that. It's crazy. Basically, your whole hallway is just full of games. Like, it's crazy.
I happen to know that's a 15-foot hallway because I had to buy a runner. So.
Oh, well, there you go.
So it's a long hallway. And I still have... My shelves are only maybe 60%. Well, they're 40% empty, about 60% full still. So there's...
If anyone's ever tuned into the YouTube, they've seen your stacks of games just growing and growing in the background.
Yeah. Well, I got to a point where I'm like, I went to the game store yesterday and I didn't leave with anything because I'm like, I have too many things I haven't played yet. I can't buy any of these things.
Right.
And I was talking to Kitty before we turned on the mics. It's like when I look at the collection and I'm thinking, okay, what game should I get? I look at all these games that I don't want to play. And I'm like, they're just like interfering with my ability to pick a good game. Just
taking up space and causing fears of an avalanche.
Yeah. And it's not like they're even bad games. A lot of them are good games, just games I'm not going to play again because they're older and I have all these new games that I haven't played at all. So what I'm going to do is at Gen Con, I'm bringing at least 20 of them, but depending on the size, I may bring 40 games. And everyone who comes to the Gen Con show is going to walk away with something because that's going to be my first set. And then I'm going to just list the games on the website. All right, these are the games. Let me know what you want. You pay shipping. Some of them I might charge a small amount for on top of shipping. Some of them I'll just be like, you pay shipping, take it. So that is all going to tie into next week's episode. I have a lot of homework to do.
Wow.
So anyway, that was the Gen Con update. Speaking of games, I still have 2 Kickstarters that I backed.
Wow.
It takes so long for them to get ready and shipped out. Exactly. It's like it doesn't even count.
Exactly. And I'm starting to get... So right now, Kickstarter fulfillments are coming in. So I'm getting like I'm getting about 2 or 3 a month for the last 2 months.
Yeah, so, see, that's your problem. You've already set up this pipeline of games that are just coming to your house at some point. Yep. And they're just turning up.
Well, that was also the problem at the game store yesterday. I'm like, oh, I already Kickstarted that. That one I already have. That one I already have. That one I already have. And like, these are the new games. I'm like, oh, that's sad.
You're too on top of it.
Yes, sadly. There's some questions that go into my addiction, so we'll get to those on the other side, too. If we haven't warned you yet, this episode's going to run a bit long. Probably, it's going to run over to 1.5 hours at least, because we have a lot of questions.
But it can't go past a certain point,
It can't go past 1 hour, 48 minutes.
We're already over.
I looked at the memory card. I'm like, we have 1 hour and 48. That's it.
Nice.
Hard stop. Star Scrapers, Cave In. This is the first Kickstarter game. Starts at $25. This game, my biggest fear with it is there's too much in the box for $25. So I'm almost concerned that they're promising too much for the amount. But it has cars. It has tiles. There's little miniatures. This is... Their little blurb is, become a galactic entrepreneur, a ruthless mining boss, carving his domain in a fast-paced card game of merciless mining industry. So essentially what you're doing is you're hiring mercenaries to mine space asteroids and get different resources and stuff. But because they're mercenaries, the people you're playing with can hire those mercenaries from you. So there's this back and forth tug of war thing going on. And then as you discard cards, the discard pile becomes stronger. So they have this, like, they call it a discard building game.
Wow.
So It for $25, I'm like, all right, that looks interesting. This other one, though, which Kitty's not going to like, is the one I'm really excited about. This one's called Who Goes There? It's a co-op game with a possible hidden traitor.
Ooh.
It's based off the book that The Thing was based off of.
Oh, man, this sounds amazing.
It is. So it's a three to six player, I think, player game. And you start out and you don't know if anyone's infected, but you have to like cooperate to get through, and you're building tools, you have to trade and stuff, but all your interactions could potentially get you infected. And over time you could get, you know, infected. But if you are, it's like, oh, I can't let anyone know because I need to get on that helicopter so I can leave with them. But if I leave with them, then you win if you're the infected person. And if you're not infected, you only win if you leave the infected person behind.
Oh, that sounds so cool.
It also has one of the best Kickstarter videos ever.
I'm going to have to watch that now.
I don't necessarily hate it.
Then you're going to like it.
Okay.
It's just a hidden traitor thing, I imagine, that's made you think that.
Yes, there's a possible hidden traitor.
It sounds a little Burke's Gambit-y, social deduction-y, but it also sounds like it's got more mechanics.
It is.
And the more mechanics there are, the more I like it.
Yeah. It's right. Not a direct accusation. It's based on what you've done, I suspect this. It's not just a pure social, you're a liar, you're not...
Yeah.
Got it.
So, and it actually plays fairly long. The playtime on this is like 90 minutes to 2 hours, which is a long time for that kind of intense game.
Wow.
So I'm really looking
forward
to it.
They always lie and try and make it sound shorter. So you've got to think like, oh, it's going to go longer.
It's going to go a while. Yeah. So that one starts at $59, and then you can get the two player expansion that takes it from a 4-player game to a 6-player game. There's two of those. So there's actually 8 characters total that you can get. The first 4 come in the base, and then there's 2 different 2-player expansions. But it doesn't go to 8 players. It just goes to 6, regardless.
You can choose which of the 8 characters you use in your 6-player game.
Exactly.
And that's called Who Goes There?
Who Goes There, yes. And the first one was Starscrapers Cave-In. Both very cool. Both, I think, have about a week left, so they are worth taking a look at. All right, Josh, take over as I go to the computer and find a winner.
Indeed. Well, let's go to some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. Now, the first one is from Terrence on board game parties. So, when you were talking about setting up several tables of the same game, it reminded me of my mother having people over to play bridge. That got me to thinking of bridge mix for gaming snacks. It's nuts, dried fruits, and pretzels. They're all good options for the gaming table. And I would love to hear more about that sangria recipe that Kitty talked about.
The sangria recipe will be revealed at some point. I have the base recipe, but my mother has secret additions and things that she does, so I have to get the official version.
Are we gonna put it up on Facebook?
We'll put it up on Facebook. Maybe we'll put a post on the website
and then Twitter.
Yeah,
well, yeah. It'll be.
We
all
could do an entire
places.
side chat on sangria.
I mean, I love sangria, so I'm looking forward to this recipe too.
All right. So from I now have the winner, by the way, but I'm gonna make people wait until the very end of On Topic.
Ooh.
The next one is from Christopher Dong. Christopher sent us a list of questions that we could do 2 full episodes around. So we'll get to some of those on the next. But he did weigh in on the 50 versus 52. He says 52 is an important number if an episode is released every week with no skipping weeks.
Like we did.
Well, there's more to it. Once a week is skipped or missed, then the importance is lost. And after the first year, the math gets hard and our brains aren't wired to see the importance. If you keep up your weekly podcast releases, pushed out episode 104 and then ask if that was a significant episode in any way, I doubt that anyone would say yes, as it marks the end of the second year of a weekly podcast release. If people did mention that, then I'm pretty sure they would be guys with British accents. And
oh,
not
whatever. The name of episode 104 is going to be 2-year anniversary.
Yes.
Yeah, come on.
I think someone else had mentioned that we've actually done way more than 50 episodes already because of the side chat episodes.
Right.
So if you count the side chats, we're actually, I think this is episode 60 or 61.
Yeah, see, now you're just on my side. Now you're just giving me more ammunition.
All right, Kitty, get the next one.
All right, from Joe Rexdad. on BGG about board game parties. If it's at someone's house, I feel like there's more pressure for the group to stay together. When gathering at a neutral location, there's less pressure for everyone to stay together. I found an awkward middle ground, I love that, where I started a game night at my subdivision clubhouse. My thought was, since it wasn't at my house, it would be easier to split into groups, but I think others think of it as my location, even though it's not my house. So they don't always like to split up. I'm still navigating how to be welcoming, but also play the games I want to play. My next attempt will involve starting out somewhere social, but then having a set time to start playing other games. The dilemma is which games I should recommend, realizing I can't play them all, and there will likely be enough for 2 to 4 games.
Yeah, so this is, you know, a lot of people have apartment complexes or something where you can rent out the clubhouse. So I like that as a general idea. It's like, oh, I'll rent out the clubhouse, it'll be bigger, there's multiple tables. You still have the same problem of people don't want to split up.
Just like an extension of your space, yeah. When you are you're still hosting there.
Yeah. Right. I think my last week was interesting because, Josh wasn't here, so you'll catch up. Have you listened to that episode?
I haven't at all. I got back in the country like yesterday evening. So
that's what I did last week. Yeah. So
I think the thing that, as far as the last point of like which games to have and you can't, you can't play them all. I like the idea of, you know, pick people that will, you know, champion a particular game. I'm starting this game. I'm starting this game. And that way you have those seeds and that person be like, oh, I'm going to go start this game here. Who wants to play? Okay. And I want to start this game. Okay. And then you can kind of split up that way as well.
I do feel like that way you can kind of end up with a picked last for dodgeball feel game.
True.
That I didn't pick any of the other games and now I'm stuck with this last game kind of a thing. I liked our like randomly assigned games idea. I know that that's really tricky though, because you might get randomly assigned to a game you hate, but then there's trading.
Yep.
So it's like a game within a game.
I don't know. After last week's episode though, I'm almost looking forward to hosting a board game night and seeing if these ideas work. Because a lot
they
of them
probably won't.
Maybe. Because a lot of them they kind of just came up with on the fly. Josh, you should listen to it. It's a great episode.
Oh, no, I will. Yeah,
you weren't on it, so it was fantastic.
It was, yeah. I mean, all of the ones I'm not on are brilliant.
All right, Josh, one more.
Oh, yeah, Michael on Word Games. I'm a bit late to this, but I demoed Pickle Letter not that long ago, which was a fairly fun word game. Also in this category, I like to play Upwords, Letter Tycoon, Paperback, and of course, Apple to Apples.
I'm not sure, of course, Apples to Apples applies, but Michael, I'm going to give you a pass on this.
Lots of other people like it that aren't you guys. I used to enjoy playing these a lot when I was younger. We wore out Boggle, Upwords, and Scrabble by the time I was 10. Then in my college years, Apples to Apples got a bit of play as a decent party game, which was later replaced by the much more annoying Cards Against Humanity.
And this is why I'm giving you a pass.
Chris hates that game. Today, I don't like them quite as much because no one will play them with me. I think it takes a special type of person to enjoy these games, as most of my serious gamer friends won't approach them. Even Letter Tycoon, which adds a whole new approach to word games. Yeah, I kind of wanted to weigh in on that because I think it goes to your point of the strategy part of it. I think people who like strategy are often serious gamers.
Right.
And I think a lot of these letter games, you know, they might have some elements of strategy. It's more about memorization.
Right.
Well, it's like a long-term strategy. You don't pick it up playing once or twice. You pick it up playing over and over and over again. Right. And the more serious gamers often like to explore different games so that you can't play enough to get very good at them.
Right. Yeah,
that's very true. So he goes on, also, like Christy pointed out, several of these have a tournament scene. I've competed in Letter Tycoon, just last year, in fact. I was destroyed, but it was fun. Scrabble has an amazing and intense circuit built around it, as does Boggle. Or maybe it did in the past, as I haven't heard much from the game in quite some time.
Yeah, Boggle, my mom used to play it all the time. It's actually the game that taught me to hate word games.
I love Boggle.
It's just like, I'm looking at him like, okay, it of... and of again.
I like Boggle because it's trying to find the unique words. You have to find all the common ones because everyone's going to have the common ones, but you cross them out as you go. So you only score the words that no one else came up with. Right. So there's like a fun creativity element to it.
If you haven't played Boggle, think of a 4x4 grid, the 6-sided dice that have letters on it, and then a cover. So you shake it up and then the dice fall into this little slotted tray, and then you have a 4x4 grid of letters, and you're trying to diagonal up and down, right? Spelling words. And you just, you know, started this word into this. You just write down as many words as you can find in that grid, and then he or her with the most words wins.
Nice.
Well, you read your list, and if somebody has the same word, you all cross it off. So even if you have only 10 words on your list and other people have 25, if they have the same 25 words and you have different words on your list of 10, you could still win.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that part of it.
So for me,
thinking further away from the norm gets you.
Yeah. For me, it's like, especially as a kid with a very limited vocabulary, I'm like,
it is really hard for kids. My mom destroyed us at Boggle for many years. My mom does not believe in letting children win.
Sweet. Mom sounds amazing.
She's something.
Yeah. He also mentions that Balderdash is was a longtime favorite. So, all right. We are at the end of off topic. We are off topic still, right?
Yes.
Who knows?
Are you sure this isn't the drinking game episode?
I'm positive. I've had nothing but like apple cinnamon tea and a Starbucks today. Maybe crazy. That's the problem. It's like,
too much caffeine.
Yeah, it's 7 o'clock at night and I've only had caffeine and tea. So, Elsa, at 7 o'clock at night, and this episode's going to post in less than 12 hours.
Ooh.
Yeah. But anyway, I have a winner.
Oh,
yeah.
What are they winning again?
They are winning two different games that I picked up from Dice Tower Con. Plague Inc., which is, it follows the video game. So if you play the video game on any mobile device, you're a virus that wants to take over the world and destroy it. Plague Inc. is the board game version of it. It's competitive, up to 5 players. And it has a lot of the same elements, the same feel, where you're kind of mutating your virus to like take over the world. And you want your virus to take over the world better than other viruses taking over the world. And then Arena for the Gods, which is a very light and easy and friendly kind of miniatures battle game. It's been compared
those
to King of
Tokyo. Often go together.
Yes, exactly. It's been compared to King of Tokyo, but I don't really think it's like King of Tokyo at all. Its table presence is very similar. But you're just like, oh, I have these 4 different cards that represent my powers, and you're drafting those at the beginning of the game. One is for attack, one is for defense, one is for a spell, one is for movement. And you roll these dice, and your dice allow you to activate these cards as many times as the symbols allow. You go around, and first person out triggers the end of the game, and then the person with the most health wins. But the health is hidden behind a shield, so you don't know who has the most health when you're attacking unless you're trying to keep track in your head.
Hmm.
So these are the two games that we're going to be giving away. And we're going to be sending it to Aaron Wan.
Wow.
So Aaron entered, he entered early. He also entered with giving us questions as well. So
nice.
Aaron,
extra entries.
Yeah. Your effort was well worth it. And now we can go on topic, which is really kind of all over the place, but we're going to do it anyway.
In this episode, we're taking a look back at the last 49 episodes, but mostly answering your questions. There are a ton of them, so this one is going long. Let's get started with a post from Michael Ohl.
All right, so we had a couple posts on BoardGameGeek, and I'm just going to read them both straight up because they're kind of the closest we're going to get to flashing back. And there's no clips in this episode. I don't have that much time to edit or anything like that. But I like these two posts. So Michael starts, I love any episode you feature me in, including this one. So Michael, you participate, so you get to be featured. So all of the past 12. But seriously, the tricking out your board game episode was great. The show was interesting, and the discussions in the forums here were great. I really loved it. I have since upgraded a great many of my games and have that episode to thank for it. I love it. My wife probably not so much. I really like that episode as well. I think when we do these episodes, we have a very, very small bulleted list of things to talk about. And we never really know where they're going to go until we kind of get into it. And then Christy posts this, like, just huge.
I know. Christy really was, like, the queen of that episode.
Yeah.
She is a master of tricking out games of all kinds.
Yeah. So. And we had a lot of input, actually. I remember there was a ton of different people that weighed in on that thread. And it was like, wow, look how much, you know, stuff we have to go off. It really makes our lives easier ever since you've started those threads. It's like, wow, our audience is doing half the work for us. Sweet.
Well, and the thing is, like, we'll come up, like, well, maybe not wheel, but I'll come up with a topic sure. and you guys just nod. And usually so find true, out so about true. It with
we
everyone
help
else
sometimes.
Does.
Yeah, every now and then.
But I'm never really sure if the topic's going to like resonate with the listeners or not.
Right.
And so this was one of those ones like, this one could resonate. Maybe. And all of a sudden, boom, rule books was another one where like you... Josh thought that there was going to be nothing to talk about.
Yeah,
because I hate them. I have hardly ever read any. I just let Chris do it all the time. Yeah.
But we had so much input on that subject. It's like, it was cool. And then other ones where I'm like, oh, this is going to be really, really popular. And they're like, two posts. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
So, but Michael goes on. A few other things I have enjoyed. Things got really silly toward the end of the drinking games episode. That was a lot of fun to listen to.
I was going to say, we listened to it blind too. None of us remember the end of the episode.
Another episode Josh wasn't on.
I know. I was listening to that one today. I only listened to the first half. It just kind of popped up in my kind of queued list of episodes. And it was just funny to like, I was like, wow, they're pretty coherent at the start of this. And then it just is slowly starting to slur more, stumble over your words. It was great.
Yeah.
It was a long day.
Yeah. He goes on, I can't say as it makes me want to try and play them anymore, though, for the fear of my liver revolting, causing me to wind up half dead or at a random neighbor's doorway. Yes, my friends would do something like that to me. You know, it's not really a party if you haven't woken up on a strange doorstep. Like, that's just how those work.
I think that was episode 30. It's around that mark. So if people are looking for it.
Yes.
Go
the drinking
it.
Game episode. It is the only episode that I've listened to before we posted it. Because the next day we recorded on Sunday. Typically I was listening to it on Monday before we posted on Tuesday, just to make sure it
didn't
wasn't
go too far.
Too
off
far.
The rails.
Yeah. I was a little concerned. I'm like, no, this is just hilarious. So
it's also the best one to check out on YouTube.
Yes.
There is a lot of silliness that you would miss out on.
Yeah. Skip to the last 2 minutes. There's like 2 minutes of video bloopers that aren't in the actual podcast at all.
I also really liked, I'm pretty sure me and Fletcher kept playing Shots Roulette while you were trying to read the outro.
Yep.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Awesome.
So again, he continues. But I have to say, the most memorable thing that sticks out to me was when I tuned in the first time. Chris was talking in the off-topic section, which I believe was just the introduction at the time, and he went on about Kickstarters without a hint of negative connotation. I love investing in them and helping smaller designers get their games made, as well as I have a friend who are producing games, one of which Chris was awesome enough to back. I'm just saying. Heck, I will be producing my own Kickstarter before long and hope that it goes well. For an RPG, not a board game, though. Thank you for giving me hope that not the entire industry looks down on the one part of gaming I love and the place to voice my opinions and feel included. Well, Michael, I have to say, and if it's not obvious, if anyone who's listening here knows that I'm a huge fan of Kickstarter, I'm going to skip ahead. There was a question, and I believe it was from Caleb, because I'm doing that off the top of my head. But the question was, are there any Kickstarters? Actually, this is Caleb. Not trying to get you to badmouth something too much. Just curious if there's a Kickstarter project you back that you regret. For what reasons? The inverse is that there are projects you didn't back that you regret missing out on. So Caleb also gives me the option to not answer the negative one, but I'm going to answer it. Because Kickstarters are a gamble. I love them. I love taking the gamble. Something sounds good. I like getting it and checking it out. Demon Espionage, I mentioned it last week and probably the week before, and I may mention it two or three more times. It just didn't resonate with me at all. Now, do I regret it, though? No. Would I go back and buy it again? Probably. Not knowing that I've played it, but if I'm like, oh, I was burned by this one card game that cost me $20, so therefore I'm never going to buy another $20 card game. Absolutely not. It wasn't a game that me and the group I was playing with really liked, but the card sleeves were really cool, so I'll go with that. And as far as missing a Kickstarter, I think this is what started my addiction. So we a year ago when we started this, Josh and I had just got done playing an all-day marathon of Arcadia Quest. And we're like, we need to talk about games. Arcadia Quest was a Kickstarter that had all kinds of exclusive miniatures and Kickstarter stuff that came with it. And I'm like, oh man, I really wish I would have backed this game, because then I would have had all of those
things. All the things.
Right. So I ended up spending a lot of money trying to get all the things, and I got most of them. And then I'm just like, I'm never going to miss out on another Kickstarter, so I'm just going to buy everything up front. That's also not working out very well. But that is my answer to Caleb's question. Reading on, and I think that is, yeah. So now we're actually to Caleb's email.
All right. So a couple things I really like about the show. Number one, I found it through Kickstarter. Chris posted in Clash of Rage asking how the developer wanted him to promote the game when he talked about it on the podcast. Avid podcast listener and board gamer that I am, I went straight over and looked at the show, getting a few episodes to sample.
I like the fact that that actually worked, and I should probably continue to do that.
Yeah.
I really want to post in the threads anytime I'm going to mention anything, because that way the people can give me more information. So if you're following me on Kickstarter and you notice me back something and you want to post in the thread and say, hey, Tabletop, I will certainly love you forever. Platonically.
Number two, you guys talk about Kickstarter. And it's a good way to get word of cool projects and fun to hear Chris so joyful talk about his problem.
What problem?
Kitty, I listen to a lot of podcasts and the majority of podcasters are male. If I come into something new, not knowing the hosts from something else or having a vested interest in the subject, I'm easily turned off if it's more than two or three male voices that aren't distinguishable. I listened to your intro episode and then Blood Rage, because I loved that game, then skipped a few episodes ahead and suddenly there was Kitty. It's great to hear diversity, both in voice and perspective, and I really appreciate what you all bring to that.
Yeah, I have to say, this was not planned. We've mentioned it before. Like, I mean, Josh was planned, and like, hey, Josh, you're British. Let's do a podcast.
Yeah.
But the dynamic that the three of us have created, that was completely accidental. And I think
Chris had started it, I think it was about a month before my birthday, because you guys had done four episodes. And we were hanging out for my birthday and Chris was talking about it. And I was like, I want to be on the podcast, not knowing that it would be a commitment that I'm still in a year later. But
yeah, there's more questions about that, too.
All right. And then last from Caleb, you guys recommended
Inish,
which
I-N-I-S,
which I immediately bought and then got to play recently. Loved it. Really solid game. Can't wait to play more.
Yep. So, yeah, I think our whole point of the podcast and the reason why we've been able to do it for 50 episodes is because we actually really enjoy talking to each other. And so we don't really talk about board games off the podcast. We hang out together. We, you know, go
we'll
out.
Play games.
We play games. Yeah. But it's not like we say, oh, let's analyze the rules of this board game. Right. Or let's analyze this topic.
I think we've always done that, really, though.
But we don't like to go into it, though, right?
Yeah, right. We're not like stuck on a topic for very long. We might have a little quick discussion here and there about, oh, this plays quite well because of this. But yeah, I mean, it's just a nice excuse to kind of hang out with you guys and play games with you every week. It's like, yeah.
And,
you know, have a chat.
Yep. I don't know. It just kind of works out. And then a lot of times we'll say, save it for the podcast.
Like, it is true.
Yep.
When we get into game discussions, it's like, oh no, we can't talk about this now.
Yep. Save it for the tape.
So we have a ton of questions and we're not going to get to all of them, but we're going to get to a lot of them. And I don't know. Do you guys have read through these?
Some of them, yeah.
All right. Well, let's go to Caleb, because Caleb did one thing that I think was cool, is he asked each of us a question. I've already answered my question. Sure. So, Kitty, do you want to answer your question?
Sure.
All right, read it.
All right. So, Kitty, for every guy that has ever questioned your board game cred simply because you're a woman, I'm stereotyping both men and board gamers and assuming this has happened to you, you'd be right. What game would you choose to play against them to destroy them at?
Awesome.
I love this question, and I have put a lot of thought into it, and I have not come up with a very good answer, I'm afraid to say.
What board games do you think you're really good at?
So I don't know, really. The thing is, we've played so many games over the last year, but we really usually only play them once or twice.
That's true.
So I don't remember a lot of the ones that I won.
But I guess the ones you really like, like, I would imagine Carcassonne, you know, would be a classic.
It's on
one.
My list, but I don't always win that one.
Right.
I always really enjoy playing it.
Right.
And I like that it's kind of harder for me to tell, like, who's winning, who's losing. I don't get too caught up in the point tracking or the, unless it's one-on-one. One-on-one Carcassonne can be very very competitive.
I would say, I mean, there's not necessarily a game that you have that, like, I'm going to win this game every time. Because, again, we don't play games the same game a ton of times. Yeah,
I don't think any of us have that.
But I will say, when you are playing a game, you are probably taking it more seriously than anyone else at the table. Even if it looks like you're distracted, because sometimes you're knitting, sometimes you're...
It's true.
You know, there's other things you're doing, but you're always paying attention, and every turn you take very seriously. And I think back to Terra Mystica, which is one of the very first games that I played with you. And if you know Terra Mystica, it is an intense game. It's rated very highly on BoardGameGeek. But it's very, very... There's a lot to it. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of strategy based on your races. And when you're playing that game, you get very upset if somebody's, like, cutting you off or doing something that goes against your strategy or something like this. And, but because you realize that the strategy is there and you know what you're trying to do.
I do get really mad when people get in my way. I think I've gotten better about expressing that in a less ridiculous way. Yes. So I'm more fun to play with, I like to think, now. I've learned to chill out a little bit. But I do think pretty much any... deep strategy game, you could not possibly play with me and think that I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. No, there's no way.
It's hard, though, depending on how you're playing Risk. I really like the randomized start to the board where right. everyone's dealt the cards and you get to put your people there, because it's so heavy on where your territories are, which ones you get can really change how the game works. And
so true.
I'm a big fan of the South America strategy, which is not as popular as the Australia, but yeah. I think sometimes works better.
I like personally. Australia.
I know you do. It was a dig at you. I'm also a big fan of one of the ones we just picked up at Origins, which is Tournament at Camelot. It is a trick-taking game, which I absolutely love because Spencer has made me play Spades a bazillion times. And it's got a lot of deep strategy that doesn't seem as deep when you first sit down at the table. It's got a lot of explanation. I think that might be one that I pull out if I was going to be like, haha, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, man.
Let me show you how I can teach you this complex game and you're going to like it.
Yep.
That was a tough one.
All right, Josh, you want to do your question?
Oh, yeah. So what games that Chris has made you play do you most enjoy and least enjoy? So I guess we'll start with that because it's a two-part question. So he also goes on to say, are there any on the to-play pile that you're particularly excited or hesitant to play? So most enjoy and least enjoy. So I think most enjoy, oh, it's tough, man. There's so many good ones. Like, I really like, obviously, Homeworlds, we always come back to. Yeah. I like any of those types of games where you're kind of pitting your mind, your strategic mind, against one other person's, or, you know, maybe more other people. But for some reason, it's just nicer head-to-head.
Yep.
And so there was a game as well that we played that was like that. It's kind of like chess, but you have to, like, flip the tiles
Duke.
Back.
The Duke.
I was going to mention that one. Right. I came down here one day. I think I had a cold or something and I was so miserable and you guys were playing and I'm like, I'm going back upstairs, text me when you're done.
Yeah, I really love those kind of games. It's just when you start doing well and you realize you're, you know, matching this other person, you're like, oh, it gives you a feeling of being like smart. You're like, oh, I'm smart, I'm like matching this person who I respect this guy, you know, Chris is an intelligent guy and he's really good at these games and I'm able to like compete with him. It's like, wow, actually I might be half smart as well.
You're at least half smart.
Yeah. Least enjoy, I think, you know, it's funny because we actually play a lot of these games, but it's not necessarily the type of game. It's if it's taken too far, but point salad-y games where there's way too many decisions. Like there's some point salad-y games that I really enjoy, like Scythe's amazingly cool. And that's definitely point salad-y. And there's other ones too that I've really liked. But when there's just way too many decisions, my analysis paralysis, you know, we always joke about it, but like, it's just, oh man, there's too many routes to go for and I don't know which ones to pick. I want to go for all of them.
So is it the too many categories at the end of the game or too many choices during the game?
I think it's, I mean, a bit of both. I mean, it's just choices in general. Like, if you give me way too many, like, there's just a threshold. Once I go past that, it's like, oh no, I'm going to spend way too long thinking about this every single turn.
I also think you get kind of the fear of missing out that Chris uses to fuel his Kickstarter. So if you're choosing a path in a point salad game, you really have to focus on it.
Yeah.
But once you started to focus on one, you're like, what if this isn't the right one? What if this isn't going to get me enough points? Yes. Maybe I should start focusing on this other one. And then you kind of like lose track of that. And then once you've done that like two or three times during a game, it's just like, and now I have no even chance. I don't know what's going on. And it's just like, ah, and that's
perfect. Yeah, exactly. You nailed it. Like that's exactly what I end up doing, is just diversifying instead of specializing.
So Terraforming Mars is exactly this kind of game.
Yeah.
Do you like or not like? Because you really looked forward to playing it.
Yeah, because I think more for the theme, though.
Right.
I just love Mars stuff. I'm a big space nut. I still really like this game because I think it's just well done in the sense that... But it's getting towards that end. It's tricky for my mind to play. I'm like, oh, no, I'm having to... So I kind of love hate, I think, with that one.
I think you might like First Martian. I have a copy of.
Oh.
I've played through.
Okay.
So I was part of the pre-order, of course.
Yes.
where there's 3,000 copies that went out before Gen Con. And so we played it, I want to say last weekend. And the introduction mission, it's not the greatest introduction mission, because if you go online right now, you can see a lot of people like, yeah, I didn't like this, I didn't like that, you couldn't do that. And it's like, well, it's just the intro mission.
Right.
And so you really don't get a good feel for it. But it's a pure co-op game with action placement. So you have these little discs that you can place. And if you place one disc, then you have a chance of completing the action. If you place two discs, then you will complete it for sure, but it costs you two of your actions. And you only get two actions per player per day, and you play a number of days based on the scenarios, usually like 6 to 8, depending on the number of players in the scenario. But you get to all your Mars feels. It's essentially like, it's not called first, is it First Martian or Martian? What's the one with, I want to
say, Matt Damon. Movie?
Oh,
The Martian.
The Martian. Martian, yeah. So it's a very significant feel to that.
Nice.
So you're on Mars and you're trying to maintain your space station and you have missions that you need to go on.
Are you growing potatoes?
There is a greenhouse.
Oh. If it's not potatoes, it's not a fun nod to the Martian.
I haven't played all the missions yet. So there's six standalone missions, and then there's a campaign you can play. There are actually two campaigns. One is a replayable campaign. Another one is a legacy campaign. So you can only play it once because it's tear up cards and things like that style. So I'm going to get you to play that. There's no point salad to it. It's win or lose. There's the app is like triggering all of the different events that go on. So there's an app driven.
I like those.
Well.
I like anything with an app. And to go on to the second part of this question, I'm going to cheat a little bit because it's not in the two play pile, but it will eventually arrive when it's done. But I know Eric Lang's new game is coming out at some point in the next sort of 6 to 9 months, which is Rising Sun.
Yep.
And I'm just like a huge fan of his. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. Massive Darkness should be coming out soon. It's not Eric Lang, but it's Cool Mini or Not. And so spoiler alert, that is going to be a giveaway with all the Kickstarter stuff that came with it, because I ordered two copies, one for the show and one for me.
Nice.
I'm broken.
First step to recovery is admitting your problem.
That's the main thing. Let's see. Let's Magnus Ham. I'm just randomly grabbing things, but will you revisit topics you've already did on the previous 49 episodes? Just to pick one at random, will you, for example, do another episode on co-op games? Maybe see what new ones have come up, how the mechanics advanced or changed, and so on.
I want another episode where there's drinking involved, because I missed the last one and it was so much fun. I was so sad that I missed it.
So we're going to do a drinking episode every month?
I mean, I'm up for it. You guys are. Seriously, I'm down for that.
I think absolutely 100%. As I look back, Sydney was just saying, she's like, I'm looking back at your last 10 episodes or so, and we haven't really done anything on a kind of game in quite some time.
Yep.
Like our early episodes, we did deck building games, we did point salad games,
co-ops.
We did co-op games, solo games. I want to do all those again this coming year.
Right. Because there's new in everything.
Yep.
There's so much more to talk about. Yeah. And we've learned so much.
Yeah. I know for a fact that my view on co-op games have gone from I was wishy-washy on the last episode to 100% love them now.
Yeah. I'm actually, that's one of the things I'm desperate to play is more co-op games. We should definitely do that.
Yep. And solo games, too. So I've been playing Arkham Horror, the card game. And if I'm going to go around and I'm like, oh, I might have idle time, I will bring that with me wherever I go just so I can potentially break it out if I have some time.
Nice.
So it's my opinion on those have changed quite a bit. Deck building games, I haven't seen anything revolutionary yet to bring that up again. Point Salad, you know, they're still kind of just out there. But there's new genres coming out all the time, too.
Yeah.
Not genres, but new mechanics and stuff to talk about. But yes, we are not going to rule out things that we've already done just because we've already done them.
Considering revisits.
Yes. All right. When you guys pick a question.
All right.
Chris, are there any games you would refuse to play?
Who's giving this question?
It's Chris is one of Christopher Dong's many, many questions.
All right. Sometimes. So the problem is refusing to play a game, if I would only do that if I can steer it to a different game. Right. So I use Cards Against Humanity as one of the games that I really just don't like playing.
Yeah.
But if it's that or nothing, if it's that or spoiling the group, or if it's that or it's like I'm going to sit and watch everyone sure. else play it, I'll play it.
Well, okay, we've proved that you're a nice guy, but I want to know which games do you really hate? We know Cards Against Humanity. Well, there must be other ones.
So I don't know if it's hate. Okay. I think in order to refuse to play a game, it's not so much hate, it's just fundamentally disagree with on some level.
Right.
Like Sydney won't play Secret Hitler.
Right.
Which is completely legitimate.
Sure.
You know, so it's doesn't matter if it's a good game or not. Okay,
so it's more about like I find this offensive, or there's something in here I just do not like.
Right. So for me, I think if I was going to refuse to play a game, a lot of it has to do with like anything that has. And it's going to sound bad because this kind of goes with biologic, but anything that is human organs or operation thing where it's like realistic images.
Right.
There's even a game. Mage Wars, where the icons are a human heart for health and an eye, like a human eye that's open and closed for whether or not it's revealed or not revealed. That iconography just grosses makes me cringe.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm not saying I would refuse it based on that, but I'm definitely way more adverse to those kinds of games than I am for, you know, pretty much anything else. Otherwise, I'm not easily offended, but I might be easily grossed out at some art. And what about you, Kitty?
I like to avoid games that I know are going to like be triggered for me to be an unpleasant player. So things that I know are going to make me shouty, get me upset, where I want to go back to my table flipping ways. So I just try to steer clear of those.
Yeah, why not? I think for me, it's probably Scrabble if I'm playing against Gloria. She just crushes me every time.
So there's another one from Christopher that I like. And this, we're going to take a quick break from board game questions. Ooh. He's like, what are your favorite board game and or non-board game podcasts to listen to? So, Kitty, you and I, actually all of us listen to podcasts a ton, right?
We do, yes.
So I thought this was interesting. I will say, the gaming podcast I listen to is the Dice Tower and Dice Tower News. Those are my go-tos. I also listen to Stephen Bonacore's Board Game Insider. So those are my three that I listen to pretty religiously. And then there's a bunch of role-playing podcasts that I listen to. But now let's do non-board gaming stuff. And Kitty, what are some of your favorites?
So I have, I'd say, two favorites. I really like Backstory. It's an NPR history podcast where they talk about a current event story and then they go through the history of it in America. So they have four different historians now who cover kind of the different eras of American history, and they talk about one of their recent episodes is about hair, the history of hair in America, going from powdered wigs all the way through Donald Trump's hair in the campaign. So that one's really fun. And then my other current favorite,
Backstory
from the American History Guys. And my other favorite right now is Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. This is two non-religious Harvard theologian students who are reading Harry Potter with the same kind of focus and intensity people take to religious texts. And it's really fun. And they read with a different theme each chapter, and they look for different things, and they use like Bible study and Torah study, different practices of reading that they would use for that kind of reading. So like they do Lectio Divina and all kinds of really fun stuff.
Wow.
Totally something I'd never heard anything like it.
Yeah. You've gotten me into a lot of podcasts, but both of those, the history one I tried listening to it a little bit. But the Harry Potter and the Sacred Text, I just couldn't get past the first few episodes.
You don't like to analyze your reading, and
that's true.
Love it.
Yeah. That's actually
all about it.
And I like to analyze my game systems and rule systems and logical stuff, but analyzing reading, I hate it. I hate analyzing movies. I hate analyzing readings. I hate like reading reviews because I don't want
to. Just like to let it wash over you.
Exactly.
And be an experience and then let it go.
Yep.
Whereas I'm like, allow me to nitpick everything about this. And if you love that, I highly recommend Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.
Yeah.
Wow. I've got tons. I love Radiolab.
Have you listened to the recent Radiolab, the most recent one?
I don't think I have because I've been away for a little bit. Which one is it?
So
what's the rough?
If you don't listen to Radiolab, everyone should for this episode. This episode is about how taking 40 minutes of someone's conversation, so us doing a podcast, for example,
right.
Adobe has this software that can take that and then they can type in whatever they want. And you are the one speaking it in your voice. They basically take your voice, break it down, and put it together. And then there's another company that's doing, they do it through like pixel manipulation, not 3D manipulation. But you can put an image of someone's face on the screen and then take another person, point a camera at them, and all the facial expressions and what they say moves in the same way of the original image.
There was a viral video of Kim Jong-un, Trump, and who was the last one?
Probably
Putin. Putin. No, it was Putin. And they're all like, they're dancing, and you're like, that looks so real. Like, it's all three of them. But it was this technique that you're talking about. Yep. It's crazy.
Yeah, so Radiolab is what we're talking about. And this episode's really good. It'll scare the heck out of you. Yeah. Because you're not going to be able to believe anything you see anymore. It's not perfect right now, but 5 years from now, you just won't even know.
The one I loved was talking about CRISPR, because often it's very
science. Yeah.
CRISPR was great.
So it's like basically gene editing and how this new technique is going to revolutionize gene editing in the next sort of few decades. But it's so accessible. You know, they explain it in such an easy to understand way over the course, and it's so entertaining as well. It's not dry. It's so fascinating.
Yeah. Do you have another one?
Freakonomics Radio is another one I love.
It's a really good one.
Yeah. They always pick apart, you know, some sort of economic principle or something. Again, so easy to approach, so easy to understand. Like, economics sounds like the most boring thing in the world, and yet it's so entertaining every time I listen and I suddenly understand some concept that can, you know, help me in my life or, you know, illuminate something.
Yeah. I like Planet Money for that as well.
Yes.
Nice, like short 15, 20 minutes. Perfect. So I have, I probably have 30 podcasts on here, but I'm just going to pick two. The one that I love is the NPR Politics Podcast. I love that group of people. I am I'm obsessed with what's going on in our political sphere.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm like, I'm just going to put my fingers in my ears and go, la, la, la.
And I used to be like that until it got to the point where it's like, I would rather know what's going on in real time than like just kind of sit the sidelines and be like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to take a more active approach. So anytime something comes up, I want to dig a little bit deeper and say, is that really real or fake? You know?
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I subscribe to Trump's tweets. So every once in a while I get a tweet on my watch and I look at it down and I'm just like, and I read it out loud and say, all right, that's happening in real time right now. So, and I don't do Facebook.
You're plugged into the roller coaster.
Yeah. Well, I don't do Facebook. I don't do social media as like track. Like, I do Twitter, but I don't follow the political stuff on Twitter or none of that stuff. But, you know, every once in a while, I'll see some tweets come through. It's like, well, that's going to blow up Facebook. Right. So that's one that I really, really like. And then probably TED Radio Hour is one that I really, really like.
Oh, yeah.
So I love the idea of TED Talks, and they boil it down into like
a handful
of related things. So
slightly D&D related, Tales from the Magic Tavern. Yeah. Three Chicago improvisers are just world building, and they keep consistent every single week. So every time they add something new into the world, it always stays. And it's just got these amazing actors. He's like, I am Usador, Wizard of the 12 Realms. And he goes on this long rant about it. And it's so entertaining.
Yeah, and they have close to 80 episodes now.
Oh yeah,
it is really good. Also game related, I listen to the D&D podcast as well, just because I like being up on what's going on in D&D. I have one today I have to listen to. I haven't listened to it yet.
For my game related one, I'll throw out the Adventure Zone. That's really fun.
What's that?
It's the McElroy brothers. They do My Brother and Me, and like a bazillion other podcasts. But this is, they play D&D with their dad. And oh, nice. Yeah, they're
so you're just hearing their D&D sessions.
Yeah, but they're edited, so it's fun.
Nice.
And they're really funny, and they don't necessarily stick with all the rules all the time.
Like
they make it very entertaining to listen to, because I think some people who take D&D very, very seriously aren't going to like it because of that. But I think a lot of people who don't take D&D very seriously are going to really like it because it is a little more light.
Yeah, what was that called again?
The Adventure Zone.
The Adventure Zone. I'll check it out.
All right, question from Sam. Actually, Sam sent us a bunch of questions. And one of the things that, before I read this, I will say is there's no way we're getting to everyone's questions.
I know.
But we have a ton of quick questions now for future episodes.
For future episodes, yeah.
So if we don't mention you, please don't feel offended. And
we might later.
Yes, we probably will later.
Totally will.
Also, I might be weighting some of these questions to people who have sent in questions for the first time versus people that we hear from a lot. So again, not trying to offend anyone. All of these questions are great. Otherwise, they wouldn't be on this list. And we're just kind of scrolling through and randomly picking things. So actually, I'll say Sam asked a bunch of questions on organizing games, collecting expansions, how to choose, you know, what game you're going to keep or new games you're going to buy. Those will all be addressed in our next episode on that particular topic. So we're going to say the one that I like from Sam just kind of talks to us and how we've changed over time. Are you guys still playing a game prior to recording an episode? What recently played games have each of you enjoyed the most? So, we do not play as often a game in front of our episodes, but that's not true. Because we have changed the format or anything like that, but because Kitty's gone to Minnesota, Josh has gone to Nicaragua.
I was going to say, for the last month, we've been kind of out of the swing of things, but I think we'll get back to Sunday nights playing a game, because we've been recording on Mondays a lot too, and there's really not a lot of time.
So when we record on Sundays, as early as we can get together, that'll kind of dictate whether or not we get a game in there or not. I have been playing a ton of games, though, outside of this. And there's another question in here about gaming groups and who, you know, do we only group play with each other? Again, I'm not 100% sure. I know most of the questions, but not all the names that go with them. And I will say that, Josh, do you have a gaming group outside of us?
No.
So Josh is just us. Kitty does.
I do. I don't say I have a regular gaming group, though. I play games with lots of people, though. I will often just, all right, let's pull out a game or something like that. I play with my family a lot. Spencer's friends always like to, they're always up for a game when we're together. We do a lot of dinner parties / let's just play a game.
Yep.
Nice.
And I have, let's see, I play Gloomhaven with our friend Sarah on a weekly basis. So we are probably 15 scenarios away from completing that game, trying to get it done before she moves to the East Coast. Sydney has some other friends that we play Zaya with on occasion. We just went to a board game meetup 2 weeks ago. Sydney and I will play like head-to-head games quite often. I play games with people at work. It seems like the last 6 months, well, 4 months or so, it's just like two or three nights a week, I'm playing something with somebody. And it's a lot, but it's actually got me to think more about playing games and collecting games, which I think is part of what's going on right now, where I'm like, I don't know if I want to buy that game. I think I just want to play something that I already have. So I think it might be a good thing. I know.
Oh my God, he's turning a corner. This is incredible.
It's It's a hard one. But I'm gonna.
We shouldn't tease him about it, though.
No, we shouldn't. No, we shouldn't. This is great. Honestly, this is great.
Kellen Lee has a quick one. What is your favorite theme for games? Theme or genre or what do
you think? It's a tough one. It's a tough one because I think it really depends on. Sometimes a game's artwork can really get me into themes. You know, I think I'm eclectic in that way. Like, I mean, I think I probably lean towards more spacey things, but like, you know, there's some amazing artwork out there. You know, when I look at Eric Lang's Area Control one that we love so much,
Blood Rage, that nobody Blood Rage. Ever remembers the name to.
Yes, Blood Rage.
Nobody on this podcast, anyway.
But I know.
Just, Sydney's always like the Valhalla game.
Exactly. Right. That sort of Norse thing going on. Like, I was so into that because the artwork was so damn cool and the miniatures are so amazing.
I'm still mad about that time that you did that thing to me in that game.
Yeah, no, exactly. And and that's the thing. I think sometimes it's the severity, going back to what will really trigger you, the severity to how much you got screwed over in any particular thing.
It's true.
You know, like if it's like, well, okay, that's a slight setback and it was expected, but it was so unexpected and it was so devastating.
And this... it happened twice and I let it happen the second time and that was totally on me and I was so mad at myself too.
Oh man,
I couldn't even put that on you. Scared. I was just like, that was on me.
Yeah, so
that was all my own fault.
To put some context to this inside conversation, Kitty needed to have Oliver, she got points for having her people in a particular area. And Josh had a hero, or a monster, actually,
a monster,
that
yeah.
If it ever spawned in that location, it killed everyone else's warriors. So Kitty's, like, putting all their warriors or putting all her warriors there. And I'm just looking, I'm like, Josh's monster's not deployed yet. I'm like, there's one space left. Josh's best move is to deploy that monster there. So he does it the first time, and Kitty's just like, you destroyed everything.
And then I was like, oh, I've got this chance to get back. I can get so many points if I do this. Completely forgetting that it was totally going to happen again. And that was on me. It's all my own fault.
It was a moment that we all remember. I like it. I like it.
So, Kitty, do you have a favorite theme?
So I think I go two very different directions with themes. I like the super cartoony cutesy games like Santorini or Oceanos were really fun ones. And then I also go for like really like medieval pretty art like Scheherazade, Tournament at Camelot, or Inish.
Yeah, I will say
I just feel like I'm slurring that.
Yeah, you are a little. I will say that I like the description of that as pretty art because to me it's I like the more airbrushed art look for my fantasy. So if it's like high fantasy art, like
that looks like you open like a role playing game guide, yeah. Like the art out of that. I'm not as big a fan of that. It's more stylized, I think. Whereas I like a more old fashioned looking, like kind of a tarot card look, kind of hand illustrated.
Yeah, I think we are across the board on that. And we mentioned during Origins when we were walking through and how Kitty would like look at games I had would not even give a second glance to, but they're like really good games. I just because of the theme, I just didn't even look at them.
Sometimes you miss out because you're focused on your theme, and sometimes you're forced to play somebody else's theme so many times that when you get to Origins, you're like, oh, "There's other games? Oh my goodness, who knew?"
I really should put these in some kind of order because there's another question of if you could retheme a game, what would it be and to what theme? Ooh. And I think I've mentioned this. I would retheme Splendor. I like Splendor as a very, it's a fun filler game. It's fun to play, but I much rather, instead of the gem theme, I'd much rather have like a space theme or something like that.
It feels a little bland, but then again, with that one, I feel like the game is so kind of elegant and pure that it almost doesn't need a theme, I would argue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's almost just colors.
Well, it, also, it doesn't have a theme.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you could just take the theme away from Splendor, and I still would probably like it better.
Yeah.
Like, it's the box art is not something I would ever been drawn to.
It doesn't look great.
Yeah.
I'd say Century Spice Road kind of fits in that same thing.
Yeah, I think it was the hype that made me buy it. I'm glad I own it. I like the game. It'll stay in the purge, but it's very simple.
The theme is, I really like the game, but I think the theme is just kind of like, oh, that's a theme. And I know they're making more Century games. So maybe once they start releasing new ones and I can see how it fits in, maybe it'll make more sense. But I did not feel like the spice mattered enough. Like, they didn't make the cubes the same color as the spices they represented. It was very confusing for me to try to use their names. So we just ended up calling them red, green, brown,
yellow.
Please. Yeah. Hand me a brown one. Here's my red ones for the brown one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It became Century Spice Road is a good game. I like it. Really, it's fun, simple to learn. Yep. But it is essentially themeless.
Yeah.
So it's an abstract game pushing cubes around.
I think it could have some more fun creative art to go on the cards.
Yeah.
But I like it as it is.
Yeah. Terrence asks, where did your theme music come from? And this is something, so any podcast that has theme music, they're probably agonized over it.
Yeah, we went back and forth a bit right at the beginning before, because I was pushing for more 8-bit sounding kind of bleepy stuff. Yeah. And you were more like, no, like more of like an elegant sort of medieval sound. Yeah. Yeah. Which I think works really well.
Well, the 8-bit sound made me think video games.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
You know, so if we were doing a video game podcast, the 8-bit sound would have been
perfect. And it was totally just because I love that sound. You know, I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And this one, I don't remember exactly where I got it, because I searched all kinds of things. But I started out searching things like freemusic.com and things like that. And I may have actually got it from Free Music, but it's a licensed piece. So I ended up spending, I think it was like $80 or something to license it. The whole song is about 3 minutes long. And all the different pieces that you hear on the podcast are different sections of that song. So there's like different stingers, and then there's this very soothing middle ground, which is our, you know, under the credits sound. And then there's that outro at the very end. So all of our music is from a single piece where I just kind of sliced it up for what I needed it for.
You should, I don't know, is there a link to it that people can go and listen to the whole thing?
Yeah, I will put a link on, I think I can put a link to it in this show notes. Okay. But because I have to turn this around in 12 hours, it probably won't be in the show notes.
Right.
But I will put a link out there so that you can listen to the whole thing, because it's actually kind of cool.
Right.
In fact, maybe I'll just put it as a side chat.
Yeah. Here's just listen the song. To the music.
Yep. It'll be like a 2-minute long side chat. Here you go. Listen to it. So I have that license, so it's mine. And then Terrence has another question that I kind of like is... Terrence, your Kickstarter question, I'm going to answer, just not on this one. But this one's a little bit works for all of us. If you had to be trapped in a game/game world, what game would you pick?
Ooh.
This is a tricky one. So I can think of the worlds I wouldn't want to be trapped in.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's a lot of crazy worlds. Like, Arcadia Quest, no, I'm fine. Not all this cutesy. I'd love to have like a little chibitzy head, but
But it's like you feel so powerful as one of those warriors, like, you know, massive sword or whatever with these superpowers, like just chopping people's heads off. That'd be cool.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. It's hard though, because most games you're trying to run from something, right?
Yeah,
I'm going Oceanos. I'm gonna go under the water and collect adorable sea creatures in my fancy submarine. That's a fun one.
Yeah, no, that's a really,
it is
a really
cute.
Chill world.
It is a cute. But if it was real, maybe it'd be more scary. It's like you're going to the depths of the ocean and it's dark and you can't see anything and you're worried your submarine might break. I don't know,
maybe.
Man. That might make me worry.
Yeah. Well, again, another game that just reminded me is we played all the way through Mechs versus Minions. So it took us 3 different sessions, but that's like a really cute world too, but not one I wouldn't want to be in. You're riding around in a mech that's out of control. Minions attacking you from all over the place. Lava trying to kill you. Josh, what do you...
As much as I love Mars stuff, and I'm like, yeah, we should colonize Mars. So I'm like, yeah, maybe terraforming Mars. But it's like, well, yeah, but for the early colonists, life's going to be really hard and tough. You're like,
so you want to be like end game.
Yeah, I want to be like, oh, we already terraformed it, man. And it's just like another Earth. But like, you know, when you're building that thing up, it's going to be tough. You're just going to be in spacesuits and little tin cans. And you're like, oh, I can't go outside. Oh, Earth's like at least 2 years away on a rocket or whatever. So yeah, it's tough. They're all a bit terrifying, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm reversing this question. These are the ones we don't want to be trapped in. I'm going to double though, because there was a question about a good time travel game, and Temporum. I wouldn't mind being trapped in that particular world. Times are always switching around and stuff, but all of them are kind of interesting. Although most of the futures are kind of bleak. But yeah. It's still kind of it would be fun to be able to travel back and forth through time.
Oh, yeah.
Step on the butterflies to change the timeline as you go forward and check it out and see what happened. And
that would be awesome.
So I would go with that one. Another question where I know the question, but not the person. What are some good time travel games? And there's another question of what are some underrated games? I think Temporum falls into both of those. It's a very simple game where you're just trying to get your crowns to the end of the track, but you're kind of going back and forth through time. The board changes every single time you play. So you have one that's in the distant past, one that's in the past. Two in the past, three in the present, and four in the future. And depending on moving backwards and forward in time, you switch the timelines. And you can actually, like, if somebody's in, future card number one, and you switch the timeline way back and anywhere in the past, that person will get shoved over to future time number whatever. That's now a valid time slot. I don't know. I really like that game.
I think it's a really fun game. Yeah. I had a lot of fun playing it.
Yeah, really easy to set up.
Yeah, I was going to say another one is Witch Hunt, which we played at Origins and talked about afterwards a lot. But it's
as far as worlds to be trapped in.
Well, no, I was going to say it's underrated in the sense that people I don't think have heard about it.
Yeah,
and it's basically a variant of Werewolf, but with lots of special roles. So if you've ever played Ultimate Werewolf, it's like that. However, it just seems to be worked out really well and plays a lot better than Ultimate Werewolf. And we were just hooked on it. We were like, I don't know if I'll ever go back and play Werewolf now at these conventions if Witch Hunt is here, because I'm having such a better time playing it. The problem I have with Werewolf is that there's almost no information. And with these games and with these extra roles, you get so much more information, and it's such an interesting back and forth to discover who is it. And we had some amazingly memorable experiences. So go out and get Witch Hunt.
Yeah. What do you think, Hedy? Do you have an underrated game? I mean, actually, Tournament at Camelot could be an underrated game.
Tournament at Camelot and Shahrazad were two that I picked up at Origins that I had never heard of, that I like both of them. Shahrazad is my favorite go-to solo game now. Like, that's a really fun, just solitaire. I don't actually know that I really enjoy the two-player co-op nearly as much because I don't get to do all the things.
Yeah. Well, and I think Shahrazad is one of the first solo... Like, you can play one or two players. A lot of these one or two player, a lot of two player co-ops are just as easy one player solo games.
Yeah.
But Shahrazad is such a small footprint. Like, it spreads out a little bit on the table, but it's relatively shallow and it's distance away from you. So you can play it just about anywhere. And it's also very fast, very, very easy to set up. There's just like, 20 tiles or something like that?
I think there's 21.
21 tiles, and that's it. And you can play this over and over and over, and you're just trying to maximize the score.
Yeah, it's like solitaire, but pretty pictures and fun, different kind of strategy than something I'd seen. I've never seen that kind of scoring or strategy ever.
Yeah. So. Yep. David Sellers, I'm curious to hear your thoughts about drawing people deeper into the hobby. Obviously, gateway games are important, but how do you level up from there? Do you have games that will say, if you like X, you'll love Y? I've been considering making a flowchart of gaming stepping stones. Do you think of it games in this way? I don't. I don't think that if you like X, you'll like Y. I don't tend to think that way. I can, but it's not my go-to. The way I bring people further into the hobby is by just teaching them new games. So, you like that game. Here, let me teach you this game. Not because you like that game, but because this one's a little bit more in depth. It seems like you were able to understand that last game we played. Let's try this one and play this one. And
I do think it helps if they have a similarity. They don't need to be like, if you like Splendor, you're going to like Century Spice Road. Like, those are very, very similar games. I'm not even sure you could say one is harder to learn than the other, though.
Right.
But, you liked... a point salad game. You liked Carcassonne. Carcassonne is a really fun point salad game. Let's try another slightly harder point salad game. Something, and it doesn't have to be the same theme, the same kind of game, not even like even a point track system. Just something where it's got a little bit of the same feel. It doesn't, because like Carcassonne is a tile laying game.
Right.
But any point salad game where the scoring's kind of the same, they're going to be like, so you score the points the same kind of way.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it can be difficult to get people further deeper into the strategy or difficulty levels. I think sometimes that might be what David's alluding to, because if they are new to the hobby or they haven't got into the hobby, there might be a reason for that, because they just don't like deep strategy games, which, you know, hardcore gamers tend to like, and those games tend to be the ones that are kind of the deeper end of the hobby. So you might find that there just comes a point where you're not going to go any deeper into more difficult and more lengthy strategy games, because that type of person, just there's a reason they weren't a gamer before, and it was because they're not into that. So I think you've got to take into account the person.
Right.
The actual person and what they're like.
I think, I mean, as far as strategy is concerned, and for some reason, there just seems to be all kinds of issues outside.
There's like some sort of emergency going on right outside our window. That's like the fourth siren to go past in the last 5 minutes. Yeah.
If you can't hear it, then great. If you can, we apologize. Welcome
so sorry.
To episode 50. Our first 15 episodes, we seem to have all kinds of sirens. But I think outside of the complications of strategy and tactics, I think it's really the overwhelmingness of the footprint of the game that you're easing people into. So if you take something like Splendor, okay, there's three rows of cards and here's a stack of chips. It's very easy to just say, oh, I get it. This is all the different things I have to worry about. Now I pull out something like Great Western Trail, which is actually a relatively easy game to learn once, you know, it's basically move and take the actions, move, take actions. But the footprint is overwhelming in right. all of the different things there. So I think you have to like slowly ramp people up on the number of different components and decisions that could potentially be there.
I think if you have somebody who's really into a theme, though, it's a lot easier to draw them yes. into more complicated games sooner.
Yeah.
Games like Great Western Trail. Oh, you're into Westerns? That's fun. You know how a Western works. This is kind of like, you know, these are the choices. It kind of makes sense because, you know how the world sort of works. Yeah, it's, you know, going to be really rule, you know, you got to follow the rules, but
yeah,
you kind of got a foot in the door.
Yeah, Chris was got Gloria to play quite a difficult card game, but it was Star Trek. She absolutely yeah. loved Star Trek, and that's what got her to sit down and really yeah. like, invest in it.
Yeah, and she said she'd play it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, even though Josh stole the win from her.
I did. That was good.
That catch-up card.
Oh, yeah.
All right. One more question. Well, two more questions. Benjamin Heimowitz. He asks, I was wondering if there's ever any tension in your gaming group over what game is going to be played. In my group, two of us have overwhelming large collections / backlogs. I know too many games are a good problem to have. But too many games might not be. But as a result, there's often a little bit of tension over whose games we're going to play on a given night. Theoretically, we switch off hosting and the host picks the game. But even that can get complicated. If we didn't have a full audience the last time or had to play a shorter game, does that count as someone's week? So I don't think you guys run into this problem.
So when I'm having people over and I'm going to play a game, I usually have a couple choices that I'm okay playing any of these few choices, and I only bring out those games and say, like, hey, pick one of these. But most of the time I play games, it's with you, and I've walked downstairs, and there is a game set up on the table, and there is no argument. This yeah. is what we're playing today.
Yeah. Well, we're lucky. I mean, all of us are pretty open to playing oh, yeah. almost yeah. anything. So, yeah, that we haven't had that problem for that reason.
I also do think it's a little bit easier to just like have an experience when you're like, oh, this is research. This is for the podcast. We're doing yeah. it. Like, I approach games a little bit differently that way. I think I'm a little more interested in like how it works. I don't yeah. necessarily worry so much about like win or lose. I'm just like, oh, this is, you know, it's an experiment for the podcast. I'm learning something new, yeah. trying it out so we can talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have this problem with you guys, obviously,
yeah.
because of that exact reason. But like Sydney and I will sometimes talk like, oh, do you want to play a game? And she'll pick one game. I'm like, I'm a little bit like ho-hum on that game. What about this game? And she's like, that one's a little bit too involved. So I think what we'll end up doing is we kind of compromise. It's like, okay, well, yeah. we'll play this game and then we'll play this game. And we kind of do that in the same session. But what I also find out is no matter what game it is, it's not so much once I start playing it. Like once I start playing the game, it's fine. It's just the idea of starting to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like her favorite game right now is Starving Artist. And it's a great game. Essentially, I think we've talked about it before. It was a winner on the Game Crafter. It's tons and tons of like real artist paintings, and there's like different cubes that you colored cubes that you're going to put on these canvases. So each piece of art is a canvas, and the canvas has anywhere from 4 to 10 cubes that you have to put on it. And it's really, really like, it's a great game. It's a very simple game, pretty fast, and she loves it. I like it. And so it's like, she always wants to play. So anytime someone new's over, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll play it with you. But if I'm just going to be her and I'd rather play something else, because I know she can get any other people to play it as well. But sometimes like, all right, we'll play.
This is the first time I'm hearing about this game.
Oh, it's really good. They got me to play it.
Yeah. You were out of town.
Man, yes. I'm so excited about this. I'll play anytime, Sydney.
It's really good.
Yep. She loves it. Like, she'll play
Sydney,
it with
you. Sydney, if you're listening, come find me right now. I'm in.
Yep. Yeah, it's a fantastic game. I just have literally 300 other games as well. So I'm like, oh, this game is really easy to get to the table all the time. So yeah. Let's play this other game that's harder.
It's so funny because it sounds just like any couple will know, like when you're trying to pick like a TV show or a film and you're both like, I really want to play this one. She's like, I don't want to play that one. I really want to play this one. Well, neither of us want to play each other's favorite. So we're going to pick something, some compromise that we're both like half happy about.
This is how I ended up watching Braveheart last night.
I watched Game of Thrones last night. Sydney's like, that's fine. I'll compromise. I will go to the bedroom and put on my headphones and not watch it. Perfect.
I made the mistake of saying I would watch any action movie made between 1985 and 1998. Oh, Spencer's like, all right, Braveheart it is. And I was like, man, anyone but that one.
All right, last question, and I'm going to combine two. So we have Chris Casey and Christopher Dung. Christopher Dung asks, what do you like most about doing Tabletop Game Talk, and what do you like least? And Chris Casey asks, what are some of your favorite moments from the last year? So what I'm going to do, we're going to end this on us just talking about the podcast, what we like about it, favorite moments and stuff. And we've covered a few of these things. But so, Josh, you and I started this thing.
We did.
So you go first. What do you like about doing this podcast?
I love hearing the sound of my own voice. It's just, it's so nice. No, I mean, it's like a nice opportunity, like I said before, to come and just hang out with you guys. Like, and you know, we talk about it, a thing that we're all into, but we play games as well. It's like it's a social thing for me. So that's the best thing about it. But it also gives me a window into a new world. Like, I had, you know, gone to a couple of meetups, but I didn't really know much about the board gaming world. But you know, I moved to Chicago, and I'd known you before, but I hadn't lived in the same city. And so then I saw your, you know, game store that you have in your own house, and you were like, let me show you the ropes, young friend. And just, you know, completely like showed me this whole world. So it's kind of a cool like window into something I didn't know much about.
I just like the chance to play games that I never would have chosen for myself, and really enjoy some of them. I don't know, like just coming down, hanging out, having fun. Going to a gaming convention was tons of fun. I am surprised how much I found to buy there. I was like, oh, Chris has all the games. I had no idea how many games Chris was hiding from me with his lack of interest in the art. That was, I think, one of my favorite moments of the podcast so far, was walking around and just like being completely drawn to completely different boxes than Chris. Chris is looking at something at a stall, and I'm like, oh, I'll just go browse over here. And then 10 seconds later, Chris is over my shoulder. What you got there? What's that? Never would have picked up the box. But yep. Now that I have it in my hand, some of our favorite games.
Yep. My favorite part is, quite honestly, interacting with everyone who listens. Like, like, it sounds like the three of us are like always seeing each other. And when we first started, Josh actually lived with me, so we did see each other.
Yeah.
And Kitty lives right above me. But even, and now Josh lives like a mile down the road, so he's a 15-minute walk, 20 minutes tops. Kitty still lives right above us, but we still don't actually see each other on a very regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Except for the podcast.
Except for the podcast. So that I agree with you guys on that. But my favorite part is interacting with everyone who listens.
That's up there too.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
It's why I kind of switched back to email me for contest entries, because even if the entry just says, hey, enter me in the contest, that's still an interaction that I like. It's like somebody who took time out of their day to send us something, saying, hey, we really like what you're doing. Hey,
what do you think about this? It's not just a name in an Excel sheet. Yep. It's a person with an email who, and a lot of times I love some of the contest entries that have like little tidbits thrown in with them. I love it. I love how many people ask for my mom's sangria recipe.
Exactly.
All sorts of fun stuff.
Yep. You know, playing games with Christy Tom and, mm-hmm. you know, like we're going to Gen Con. Email me, tweet to me. I don't check the Facebook stuff, but Kitty does.
I do. I just talked to someone.
Yep.
Yesterday, I think.
So if you're going to be there, you know, get a hold of us however you want. I'll be checking the email pretty frequently. You can tweet me or Tabletop. I get those right away. Let's meet up. Let's play a game, because that's really what's really fun about it. When Jerry came up to us when we were standing in line,
I know our voices got recognized.
Yeah, we're just sitting there.
So exciting.
You know, talking, and then he comes up and is like, oh, you guys are Tabletop. I mean, that kind of stuff is like super cool. I somewhat kid, because this really isn't a joke. Right after we got back from Gen Con, I'm like, we should start a podcast so that I can get a press badge next year for Gen Con so I can get in an hour early on Thursday. Last week, I got my acceptance for a press badge at Gen Con. So that worked. Podcast complete. This will be our last episode.
Chris is addicted now.
Get it again for next year.
Oh, right. All right. 50 more episodes.
I'm pretty excited for Gamehole Con this year.
Yes. Gamehole Con is going to be a blast.
When is that again?
First weekend of November.
Like it.
So, and we're going to have two tables going essentially nonstop Friday, Saturday, and early Sunday. And it's like going out and interacting with people. It doesn't sound, I refer to myself as kind of a shy extrovert. Like, I don't approach people, but if somebody approaches me, I'm more than happy to talk your ear off.
Yeah.
See, that's funny, because I think of myself as an outgoing introvert.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we balance well.
Yeah. And you are exactly that. So that's what I really like, that interaction. What I don't like about the podcast, there's not too much, but there's sometimes guilt. Like if I don't do something, if I'm not active enough on Twitter, or if I forget to post on BoardGameGeek, or I'm really, really out of date with putting the videos up on YouTube. So I'll feel like a little bit of overwhelmed. That, oh, I'd have all this stuff I have to do. This episode, the show notes on this was crazy because of all the input and stuff and the questions. And so I spent like 4 hours like putting all this stuff together, getting all the contest stuff sorted out. That was fun. But up until it was done, I felt guilty for not having it done. So it's really just, I wish I could put more time into it. It's not that I don't like anything about it. It's just that I can't be full time doing it. So, Josh, what do you hate about it?
I thought you were going to say that you hate how little me and Kitty do on the podcast,
no.
which is kind of what I was going to say was like, yeah, I hate the idea that I might have to do more and feeling guilty that you do 90% of it.
No,
you're very nice about it.
I honestly do not, and I've actually talked to other people about this too. Yes, I consider myself like the producer, I guess.
Sure.
But I do not, I can't possibly take you guys for granted. Like, I couldn't do this if it wasn't for you two and the dynamic that you bring just doing what you do.
No.
So it's, there's, no. I'm more than happy to do all this stuff. Also, if anyone out there wants to help keep up to date on BoardGameGeek, I just need to put the games in that we talk about in the feed. No.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Any unpaid interns I can exploit or...
Now, what about you, Kitty?
So sometimes it's like 5:45 on a Sunday, and I'm ready to like just sit down and do something. And then Chris texts me and says, like, all right, so Josh will be here in 5 minutes. And I'm like, oh, yeah. But then I walk downstairs and I'm like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah.
Right. I like doing this. But there's like, there's a couple minutes sometimes where I'm like, every week.
You can always tell the episodes are the worst because she's like, I'm so tired. But
not as much. Had the amazing opportunity to quit my job and be a stay-at-home dog mom. So, since I've got so much more energy and time, and I have not felt that way in the last, well, I mean, I was on vacation for a month, so we'll give it a week and see.
Yeah. Well, I think, one of the things that happens is once we're here and we start talking, because Josh, we've mentioned this before, always paranoid we're not going to have enough content to fill the podcast.
I know.
Never, ever a problem.
Yeah, I know. I guess it's because I'm like, I am the least versed in the world of board games. Although I'm becoming more and more proficient as time goes on. It's been a whole year of playing games. But, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, goodness, like I know next to nothing about deck builders. But then obviously, because I know next to nothing, then I can ask a bunch of questions that, you know, you might not have anticipated people not knowing. So, you know, it works quite well that way.
Yeah. So what are some of our favorite moments throughout the year? Drinking game episode we've already talked about. I don't know. For me, episode 4, when Kitty sat down, because again, flashback, episode 0 exists. It's the very first take that Josh and I ever talked on the microphones.
Yeah.
We're like, let's just see how this works. Let's just record and introduce ourselves and see if we have any kind of chemistry. I'm going to go back and
listen to that,
And it worked, and I'm like, okay, well, now I'm going to put it up just to go through all the technical process. When we did episode 4, and Kitty sat down, and the dynamic started coming out. Now that
we also totally changed the format.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for the first couple episodes, like 4, 5, 6 maybe, it was almost like I was interviewing you guys, because I wasn't really, we didn't quite have the flow yet.
Right.
But like, just watching those first few episodes start to kind of shake themselves out and where we went. I think Sam asked, like, you know, you've made a lot of changes to the format. Would you do anything differently? And I think that what we did and what we learned while doing it was really, really important. And I wouldn't go back and change any of that, because those learning experiences are what kind of made us what we are today. Now, we're not the greatest podcast out there, but we're not the worst podcast out there. Mm. And I like what we do. And I actually like listening to our own podcast, which is, you know, narcissistic, but I like it.
I can't listen. I listened to the episodes I wasn't on. That was fun. I'd say, man, I had a really good answer and then I got totally distracted. I don't know. Some of my favorite memories from the past year. I like that I learned how to interrupt Chris.
Yeah.
Because I think that was one of our big problems in the early episodes. That's why it sounds like Chris is interviewing us. Because you really have to kind of assert yourself to get into the conversation with Chris sometimes. Mm. He can really get on a roll. But I think we've learned how to do it in a good way, where it doesn't sound like, oh, I'm just stepping on Chris right now. Like, you know, we've got like these little like signals that we've got like eye contact, and when we're all rolling our eyes at the sirens together, those kinds of moments are really fun for me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that meeting Jerry Huang at the convention was probably my favorite thing. It was just like, oh wow, like it kind of, you know, we get the emails and that's amazing in itself. When we first started getting emails as well, was another favorite thing. It was just like, wow, people are actually listening. People actually care about the stuff we're talking about and that are like engaged. And, you know, like you were saying about the getting the emails, it's like, wow, okay, someone's taking their time out of the day to talk to us and engage with it. And it's just like, wow, I can't believe, you know, we've created something that people are actually interested in, and that you can have that back and forth. Because it's, at the end of the day, like coming into this hobby, it's the social thing that I love the most about it. And I just, I'm a big kid. I love having fun. And that's what games are all about. And so it's really nice to have this community and be able to kind of talk and speak to other people who love that, who have that kind of same energy and love this as well.
Yep. And speaking of which, I do want to give thanks to Terrence, Andrew, Jason, Aaron, Jared, Kellen, Sam, Caleb, Ben, David, Magnus, Christopher, and Chris again. Well, Chris Casey this time. All of these questions come from those people. There's a ton of questions here. Also, thanks for everyone who's participated in all of our different episodes. You know, Christy, thank you. Tom, well, obviously all our patrons, but, you know, there's a ton of you that are always, you know, engaging with us, whether it be on BoardGameGeek, whether it be in emails, whatever the case, like, you guys are the ones that keep us going. If it was just silent out there,
I don't know. I still feel like watching the numbers roll in every week. Like, there's so many people out there who aren't participating, who are listening. And that's still pretty exciting. So to all you, like, silent lurkers out there, thanks to you, too.
Yes.
You know, you're also important to us. I don't engage with podcasts either. I am one of you. So don't feel like Chris is shaming anyone.
Oh, no, I'm definitely not. I have like 30 podcasts that I listen to, and occasionally I'll email one of them. So you're absolutely right. The non-interactive listeners, we just love as you important. As well. Yes. So anything else that we want to talk about? Episode 50. This is our longest episode.
Wow.
We won't do it again.
Yeah.
We promise.
Well, not for at least another 50 episodes. So we'll see. Episode 100. You got to admit that's a big one.
That is a big one. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to the cake when we're 1 year old in 2 weeks' time, personally.
Our 2 year anniversary of episode 104.
104. Yeah. Yep. You wait. I don't know. I might have to take a week or so off during the wedding, but I don't think so. Right now, I do not plan to not have a podcast.
Well, we can record back to back.
Yeah.
We can record back to back.
Well, that's true. Actually, that led me to one of my biggest regrets. Not really regrets, but one of the things that I might think about changing is we have a feedback section at the beginning of each episode, which means we have to record every week. Mm. So if ever we need to do a back to back, we really can't without you guys knowing that we recorded back to back,
because
off topic would essentially not have anything in it.
Right.
There's no new Kickstarters that week. There's no feedback. Yeah.
So it's a tricky thing for me, because I really like off topic is my favorite part of the podcast. It's where we can just talk about, you know, just miscellaneous things.
Right.
And I don't want to get rid of that. But if we didn't have it, it'd be so much easier to do the podcast.
We just need some new segments for off topic.
All right.
Write in with your suggestions for new topics for off topic that wouldn't necessarily give away that we're doing back to back. But we could use on a day where we're not doing back to back. You'll never know.
Yeah. The evergreen segment that we can do that isn't time based. All right. So our post topic segment. Basically, thank you, everyone. If you've ever given us an iTunes review, thank you. If you listen and you can in any way give us an iTunes review, that's awesome, too. It adds a lot of... I don't know that it bubbles us up into the search. I've heard miscellaneous things, but it does add a lot of cred. So if people look and they say, oh, this is a well-reviewed podcast, that helps people like at least try it out for the first time. Also, if you're interested in becoming a patron, tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. There's multiple levels there. If you want to be at the top of the show, that's a level that we always appreciate. There's only 5 people that can possibly be at the top of the credits, but you can do that. And everybody's automatically entered into all of our giveaways if you're a Patreon, if you're a patron on Patreon. So that's really helps us out. That actually allows me to buy games to give to you guys. So really that money's just, I don't know what it is, but it's fun for me. And Josh, why don't you take us out?
Sure. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review. Email us with comments and questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to all of our patrons, Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Lou, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stephen Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, and Christopher Dong. Until next week, when we talk about managing your game collection, Chris, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So we still have 9 minutes and 40 seconds left. Should we just do a whole nother question at the end here?
No.
All right, fine.